mechanical extractor. Now, on to the program, and thank you for your support of marijuana activism and 420radio.org. Tokers and Tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, August 12th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to you non-toking lovers of liberty as well. I'm Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, where it's only 78 degrees in the studio today, so we're feeling a whole lot better. Joining us from our virtual studio in Colorado, we've got Priscilla Seibin on the line. How you doing, Priscilla?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Looking forward to hearing from you. Priscilla brings us the 420 radio news right after our first break. And today, sad to say, is your last day doing the news. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I'm so sad to be gone.
That's okay. You're leaving to go back to school, right?
Yeah. I got to get back to school. I'm actually going on a little vacation to see my family in Texas. And then I'll be back to school, back on the grind, doing the damn thing.
Right on. Well, you've done a great job this summer here with our 420 radio news. We appreciate your service and your volunteerism, and we hope we can help you any way we can in the future. Maybe we got some events coming up in Colorado you can cover for us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, my pleasure. It was a great opportunity, and it was wonderful to be a part of the 420 Radio family.
Thanks so much, Priscilla. All right, well, on today's show, in the news today, we've got one of the best pieces of news, Priscilla. Mark Emery is back home. That's right. The Prince of Pot is back home. He's out of prison in the United States. He crossed the border into Windsor, Ontario, Canada today. That'll be our first headline story today in the news. Also, as predicted, the Don't Be Al a Brat campaign in Denver has suffered some vandalism. I predicted it yesterday when they unveiled the cages, and pretty much what I predicted came true. So we'll tell you all about that. Also, a couple cities in the United States looking to decriminalize marijuana. Saginaw, Michigan has got it on the ballot. Wichita, Kansas is fighting to get it on the ballot. We'll give you an update on that. And news on medical marijuana in South America for the very first time. So we'll get that to you all coming up right after this first break in our 420 radio news. And then in the Behind the Headlines segment, turns out Colorado overestimated how much pot tax they would make in the first year of recreational legalization because, wouldn't you know it, people who smoke a lot of weed would rather just go get their red card. Are you surprised, Priscilla?
No, not especially with the prices.
Exactly. Damn. We'll talk about that, too, coming up in Behind the Headlines. Also on the show today, we've got a couple of guests. In the first hour at half past in our activist agenda, we'll be speaking with Jamie Lowell. He is the host of Planet Green Trees Radio. I met him out there at the Michigan Cannabis Cup, and he's going to give us an update on what's happening in various cities, including Saginaw, Michigan, for the election this November. And then at the end of the show, we'll have time for a radical rant. Radley Balco, one of my favorite writers out there on the drug war, produced a piece for the Washington Post about how traffic fatalities have declined in Colorado since legalization. Wouldn't you know it, former drug czar John Walters has weighed in to criticize the statistics. It's just so silly, I can't help but rant about it. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show. Also on the show today, in hour two, we're going to lead off with talk about Ferguson, Missouri, and the murder of Mike Brown, and how that ties in to the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. And in our 20 after break for Electric Tuesday, we have a musical guest. Mr. Benjamin will be calling in, giving us some of his new music called Smoke With Me. All that plus hemp powering new supercapacitors. We've got a press conference on that was held today in San Francisco. hemp could be the new high-tech material of the future. All that coming up on the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
My name is Richard William Riggs. I'm a judge in Oregon. In 1998, I was elected to the Oregon Supreme Court, where I served until October of 2006. I've been asked to give my views about the new approach to marijuana initiative that is going to be before the voters very soon, and I'm happy to do so. I've read the measure, and I'm going to vote for it. And the reason I'm going to vote for it is because I think that it's inevitable that marijuana is coming to Oregon in one form or another. And I hope it comes in the form of a good bill like this one. If we're going to have marijuana in Oregon, this is the way to do it. Drugs and marijuana particularly play a huge role in the economic engines of most of the local gangs. The gang-related violence that occurs is often as a result of bad drug transactions of one kind or another. I think the proper legalization of marijuana and the control of it in an appropriate way is a substantial step forward to eliminating some of those problems. Using the criminal justice system to enforce certain societal social norms is kind of a waste of resources. It takes away from the criminal justice system dealing with forcible rapes and murders and so forth. I've read this measure, and I'm going to vote for this measure. And I think anybody who reads the measure and gives it careful thought will probably join me in that vote.
A cannabis broadcast with John Kay and Scott W. from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, Canada. Replaying Fridays at 10 Pacific on 420radio.org.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
Having some audio difficulties with Priscilla's mic. We'll see if we can get that turned on.
Are you there? Priscilla?
Yeah, we got you now. Go ahead.
Hi, Dad. Sorry about that. All right. 420 Radio News, Tuesday, August 12, 2014. Oh, happy birthday, sis. All right. The Prince of Pot is back in Canada after 5 years in a U.S. prison. Mark Emery, the cannabis culture publisher and marijuana seed seller, crossed from Detroit, Michigan into Windsor, Ontario, Canada this afternoon. Dozens of supporters met Mark Emery there, joined by his wife, marijuana activist Jody Emery, and lit up joints and vape pens to celebrate his arrival. When Emery was arrested almost a decade ago, the U.S. DEA proclaimed his arrest was a, quote, significant blow to the U.S. legalization movement and that reformers would have, quote, one less pot of money to fund their activism. Since that day, July 29, 2005, 8 states and D.C. decriminalized marijuana, 13 states and D.C. legalized medical marijuana, 11 states legalized use of CBD oil, and 2 states legalized marijuana commerce. Ooh.
Wow, what a significant blow. Gee, yeah. We really suffered by you putting Mark Scott Emery in prison, DEA. Gosh, what a amazing event there, huh? As predicted and as expected, all Mark Emery's prison sentence did was galvanize the people who want marijuana legalization to push harder for it and created another brand new activist in the incomparable Jody Emery, who's now getting serious discussion in Canadian national political news about running with the Liberal Party. and working with Justin Trudeau and those guys. I mean, she's appearing on Canada's versions of like Meet the Press and Face the Nation and all that, and getting some serious political headway in becoming an elected official, becoming an MP there in Canada. So DEA, this should teach you the lesson that fighting hard against our heroes and against the people that are funding marijuana legalization is only going to hurt you in the long run. So, hey, you got more people to go after? Go after them. We'll just keep overgrowing the government.
Oh, yeah. The Don't Be a Lab Rat campaign to convince teens not to smoke pot didn't last 24 hours before someone smoked pot in one of the human-sized rat cages. The campaign features two such human-sized cages, a TV ad, and three theater ads designed to convince teenagers that there isn't sufficient data on marijuana use, so their experimentation with weed makes them lab rats in Colorado's so-called, quote, legalization experiment. A CBS Denver reporter who visited one of the cages found someone had crossed out negative and scrawled in positive in a sign touting marijuana's, quote, negative effects. Someone had also scrawled, quote, smoking weed saved my life. And CBS photographed a young man toking up inside a cage. Organizers of the campaign plan to add more such cages to schools and other locations.
They are so tone deaf and clueless when it comes to how are we going to convince teenagers to wait until they are adults. Did you get to see any of these cages, Priscilla? You seen them yet?
I haven't made it down that way to downtown, or I haven't seen them yet.
If you do, please take a picture with one of them and tweet it out to us so that we can see.
Yeah, I will.
Because this is exactly what I predicted would happen. Although I actually said I'd take a bunch of kids and sit them in the lab rat cage with a sign that says, "Where's our free weed?" But this kid took it one further. He went out and just smoked some weed in the cage. And that's bound to keep happening as long as you continue to try to use scaremongering to get kids to not smoke pot. Mason DeVert put it best. The line used to be, this is your brain on drugs. Now the line seems to be, well, this is your brain. It might fry on drugs. You know, to try to introduce this doubt or, you know, seem like it's some sort of experiment. Look, teenagers have been smoking marijuana since the 60s, and I'm not encouraging teenagers to do it, but the facts are that we haven't seen a huge detriment to society because some of the teenagers have done it. I can't tell you how many people, how many colleagues, some of the most respected doctors, lawyers, media personalities, writers that I know in the marijuana movement who started marijuana use as early as age 12 and seemed to be functioning just fine. Again, I'm not recommending that. I perhaps have a nice, a different sort of selection of people, and I get to meet all the successful ones. Maybe there are lots of people who smoked weed when they were 12 or 13 that didn't turn out so good. But what I'm telling you here is we're not seeing a huge impact from youth marijuana smoking, not to the extent that it demands that we have this scaremongering tactics. You really want to make it so that kids don't want to smoke pot? Don't put a rat cage out there. Put a fake living room with a mom in mom jeans and a dad wearing, you know, world's greatest dad t-shirt, watching 60 minutes on the television smoking joints. That would convince kids not to smoke pot because they'd see it as something boring, something that old people do, something that's not cool, something that's not rebellious. When you put this rat cage in front of them, it's just like an open invitation to be rebellious and to mock this fear-mongering. And this cage that got scrawled up, this one was at a skate park. Like, gee, what did you expect, fellas? And now they want to put a whole bunch of them at schools and other locations where kids hang out. All it's going to do is create more opportunities for fun little selfies, Twitter pics, and hashtag memes to go up about these stupid Don't Be Al a Brat cages.
Voters in Saginaw, Michigan will have the chance this November to decriminalize 1 ounce or less of marijuana within the city. The city council voted 5-4 yesterday to place the initiative on the ballot after activists turned in 2,287 valid signatures out of the 3,800 collected, beating the statutory mandate of more than 2,000 signatures needed. The Saginaw City Attorney advised the mayor that the state law required the council to pass the initiative onto the ballot by today's date. The council was split on forwarding the initiative, but the mayor broke the tie, explaining that otherwise activists in attendance would file a lawsuit against the city that it could not afford to defend. The change would mostly be symbolic, as most marijuana possession charges are made at the state, not municipal level. It would remain to be seen whether city police would write local decrim tickets or make state misdemeanor arrests for small amounts of marijuana.
Well, I'm betting they would probably stick with the arrests. They're kind of fond of that, right? But we'll see. I mean, if this thing passes by a huge margin, you know, in the like 2/3, you know, 67% area, it might be tougher for cops than at least the city cops to be writing these state tickets. And they, you know, another thing too is the city might be able to make some money off of those fines for decriminalization. That might be some pressure on those cops there to write more of those tickets. But what this does show is that the key to beginning your grassroots legalization campaigns is to start literally at the grassroots, to start at the municipal level. I get a lot of people with stars in their eyes dreaming of, you know, legalizing their entire state, and it's a worthwhile endeavor. However, you've got to lay the groundwork for it. And the groundwork is getting these legalization or decrim or medical ordinances passed at the city level. And a lot of times they're just symbolic, but symbols mean a lot. This is what Massachusetts did when they wanted to go for decriminalization and medical marijuana on a statewide level. They did it in like 30 cities beforehand. And again, it didn't have much practical effect. You know, people were still getting arrested and everything, but it was harder and harder to defend being against legalization when activists could show, hey, the people of 30 cities voted for this. And so that's right. What's happening in Michigan. We'll have all the coverage of election night 2014 on November 4th, Tuesday night, all the way from South Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon, Great White North of Alaska down to the Sunshine State of Florida. And we'll hit the middle of the country with Kansas and Michigan as well.
And voters in Wichita, Kansas may not be out of luck yet on a November decriminalization vote. In this morning's meeting, the city council voted 7-0 to allow activists to work with the city legal staff to craft new petition language that could be voted on in April 2015. But the November vote isn't out of the question either. Activists fell short by 47 names on a petition to put decriminalization of 1 ounce on the ballot, and they plan to challenge the disqualification of hundreds of signatures over handwriting irregularities. August 28th is their deadline for inclusion on the November ballot. Meanwhile, Fire It Up Kansas, a legalization group, will debut 2 new billboards around Wichita supporting full marijuana legalization.
Well, good news there in Wichita. Man, I want so bad to be able to report from Kansas on election night for decriminalization. That would be so cool. 47 names is not a whole lot of names to have to recover. And if they're able to challenge some of these disqualifications, and they turned in more than twice as many signatures as they needed. So they ought to be able to find some signatures they can reclaim from the pile of discards there that would actually turn out to be valid. So I'm keeping my hopes up. I think we're going to have a decrim on the ballot in Wichita this November.
Cecilia Hather, a Chilean housewife suffering from breast cancer and lupus, is thought to be the first legal medical marijuana patient in South America. While Chile and most other South American countries have decriminalized the personal possession, usually 5 or 10 grams, of marijuana, no country has followed the example of states in the U.S. that have legalized medical use of marijuana. In June, Chile's Institute for Public Health granted Hather an exemption to use Sativex, the whole plant cannabis extract manufactured by Britain's GW Pharmaceuticals. Ana Maria Gasmuri, president of the DEA Foundation, calls the move, quote, a very significant step in helping the 20 epileptic youngsters her foundation is treating with cannabis. Chile's center-right Amplitude Party has proposed legalizing the home cultivation of marijuana for personal purposes, and polls show support for medical marijuana in Chile hovering around 78%.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the situation in South America, they didn't do medical at all, right? I mean, both North America and South America have demonized the use of cannabis for recreational purposes for years and years and years. Americans thought the best way to get around that would be to fig leaf the use of marijuana. Oh, no, we're not getting high. It's really medical. And it is in a lot of cases, of course. In South America, though, they took a different tack, and their tack was about addicts, and that we shouldn't criminalize addiction. In a sense, kind of a medical thing. They're saying that anyone who's using drugs on a regular basis who gets caught is some sort of addict, and we shouldn't criminalize them for their health condition, for being addicts. So not only are things like, you know, 5 or 10 grams of marijuana decrim in Mexico and Central America and South America, but oftentimes even personal amounts of cocaine or meth or heroin or acid or anything like that, you know, small amounts are decriminalized in these states. This move toward medical marijuana, I don't know, it's a little bit, I got a little bit of a problem with it, considering that it's GW Pharmaceutical Sativex. That's more pharmaceutical marijuana, if you ask me. Oh, it's a sad 420 today. It's our last goodbye to, or so long, I should say, to Priscilla Seibin, who has to get to her specially appointed 420 celebratory duties there in Colorado. Priscilla, thanks again for everything you've done, and we will see you on the show again.
Yeah, my pleasure. See you around.
Bye-bye. When we come back, we go behind the headlines on Colorado overestimating their tax revenues from legalized marijuana.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts.
Join us for the International Cannabis Business Conference September 13th and 14th in the Portland Ballroom at the Oregon Convention Center. The International Cannabis Business Conference will focus on the emerging cannabis industry in Oregon, the United States, and around the world, putting you in front of the industry's foremost entrepreneurs, political leaders, and attorneys. Also showcasing over 40 cannabis-related industry exhibitors, offering VIP lunches and free nightly networking events. Prepare yourself for America's next great industry.
I don't use marijuana, but as a teacher of 36 years, I can tell you lots of other people use it. I don't believe in prohibition. I don't think it works. Prohibiting it hasn't stopped anybody from getting a hold of it. I would like to see it regulated so that maybe kids can't get a hold of it so easily. I know they get a hold of it now very easily. I support a new approach to marijuana. I support legalizing it. It's with us. It's not going to go away. And if we can get money through the taxation, we can also educate our kids about it. That's why I support it.
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And in today's story, we're going to talk about how Colorado is revising downward their estimates for recreational marijuana taxes. On Tuesday, the legislators looked into the forecast that showed $30 million less than what had been predicted before. Back in November of 2012, when the voters were choosing to legalize marijuana constitutionally in the state of Colorado, they were promised $61 million would be raised in the first year. That was part of their ballot information. $61 million would be raised. And now they're reducing this down to $30.6 million. And part of the problem with it is the fact that marijuana had always been illegal, and there had been no really good market data on marijuana with which to make any initial assumptions. For example, they estimated that a average marijuana user in Colorado would be using 3.5 ounces a year. And now they're saying the new forecast says marijuana users are going to use just 1.9 ounces a year. So that's a kind of a downward revision that's definitely going to take a chunk out of the tax revenues. And of course, we're talking about average users, right? So you have a typical Pareto principle involved here, where 80% of the marijuana is consumed by 20% of the users. That's a standard economic sort of principle. So this average of 1.9 ounces is going to include the people that might use a quarter pound a year, and then balance that off with a whole bunch of people that are only going to be smoking an eighth a year. You know, so there is a balance there. But as far as where the money went, there are other things they didn't account for that they should have accounted for. Sure, it's going to be impossible to predict how many people are going to smoke pot, how much they're going to smoke. But predicting that they would want to avoid a 15% plus 10% plus 2.9% taxation scheme, why, that's quite easy. In fact, back when they made their original assumptions, they were predicting that there would be fewer medical marijuana patients. Their initial assumption was medical marijuana would decline once there was more readily available recreational pot. But of course, and this is a quote from one of the people who delivered the research to the legislature, said, quote, "If users purchased more than a half ounce, it made sense to get a red card. It made sense to go to the doctor, pay your fee to the doctor, and then pay your fee to the state to get your red card, because in the long run, you'd be saving on the taxes." And this is just simple economics, because the red card in Colorado, it's constitutionally tied to the cost of running the program. So it has fallen from being a $100 purchase to a $35 purchase. So I think the most recent fee for a medical marijuana card in Colorado is $15. Then on top of that, there are so many doctors that are willing to write recommendations for a low cost that it's easy to beat the taxes and get your medical card. And let's not forget that there are many more medical dispensaries. There's much more selection with medical marijuana than there is with recreational marijuana. So who wouldn't want to avoid 25% of the taxes by going medical? This caused a significant blow to their tax revenue projections. And still to this day, medical marijuana taxes are bringing in 20% more tax revenue than recreational marijuana taxes, even though they're only taxed at 2.9%. So this is great news for those of us in Oregon who are looking to legalize with a flat tax of $35 an ounce, or Alaska, where they're going to have a flat tax of $50 an ounce. What it's going to show the experience in Colorado, and most certainly once they start crunching the numbers in Washington state, is that the overtaxation of marijuana is detrimental to eliminating the black market and generating tax revenues. You're going to get more tax revenues from a lower tax if you can get more people on that side than keeping the tax high and pushing everyone to the medical marijuana side. It's even more exacerbated in Washington state, where they've got 25% plus 25% plus 25% plus 8.9% sales tax versus medical that has zero taxes involved with it and is very unregulated. States are going to have to get a handle on this, and it may not be too long before we start to see a state that goes for just recreational legalization and doesn't even try to factor in medical marijuana. Medical marijuana cardholders, you need to get involved in this as well and understand that fighting for special privileges for sick people could lead the next few states to avoid giving any privileges to sick people. Now, of course, there are people that'll say medicine shouldn't be taxed, and these people are, you know, disabled, and they're on fixed incomes, and all of that is true, and I completely support ways of getting low-cost weed to them. But if you can afford it, you ought to be paying the taxes, sick or not. All right, stay tuned. We're back with Jamie Lowell from Flint, Michigan, and Planet Green Trees Radio after the break.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
Daily Toker Tunes, a full hour of tunes from our Daily Toker Tunes library, including Roots Monday, Electric Tuesday, Irie Wednesday, Groovin' Thursday,
the International Rockin'
Friday.
Business Conference takes
every
place
day
September 13th
at 2 o'clock
and 14th at the Portland Ballroom in the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. Featured speakers include Oregon Senator Floyd Prezansky, U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, Daily Dish blogger Andrew Sullivan, author Doug Fine, and Harborside CEO Steve D'Angelo. To learn more, visit our website at internationalcbc.com.
Activism begins with act. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 32 after the hour. And as you know, I travel across this great country performing at many different events, 20 states in all so far in my career. And the most recent one I appeared at was the High Times Cannabis Cup in Flint, Michigan. It's actually in Clio, Michigan, which is kind of close to Flint, at the Auto City Speedway. And there I got to meet an activist working with Planet Green Trees Radio. His name's Jamie Lowell, and he wanted to come on the show and have a chat. So, Jamie, welcome to the show. Hello, Jamie. Are you there? Getting no answer from Jamie on the line. All right, let me go to some music and we'll see if we can get Jamie back on the line. We'll be right back.
Come on, everyone, to the ganja plantation. Come on, everyone, to the ganja plantation. And everybody knows,
everybody knows,
that's where we like to go. That's where we like to sing.
All right, folks, just getting a message machine from Jamie Lowell's line here. So we are going to do it live and change up our lineup just a little bit. So take a quick break. And when we come back, we got a press conference on the viability of using hemp in superconductors and supercapacitors. This could revolutionize computer science, folks, and the internet. Stick around. We'll be right back.
And everybody knows, that's where we like to go.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Hey, Lindsay. I wish you didn't smoke weed. You're not the same when you smoke. And I miss my friend. I'll be outside.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Down the century, you have slurred the meaning of the words, we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question, do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. 37 after the hour, and calling an audible on today's show by going to this press conference, actually a panel that was held. No, I guess it was a press conference that was taking place today at the 248th annual American Chemical Society National Meeting and Exposition. This is taking place in San Francisco as we speak. You can find out more at acs.org/SanFran2014. And the topic of this particular press conference is one that I think is of interest to everyone here in the marijuana movement, and that is, could hemp nanosheets topple graphene for making the ideal supercapacitor? Now, of course, this development, if it took place, would revolutionize computer science, the internet, and so forth by providing a cheap alternative to graphene for making many of the electronic devices that we rely on to power the internet, our computers, and our smartphones. So we're going to take a look at this presentation from the ACS National Meeting and Exposition took place today in San Francisco, California.
Good morning, I'm Christine Tso. Welcome to this news briefing from the 248th National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society in San Francisco. We're joined today by Dr. David Mitlin from Clarkson University. He's going to talk to us today about his work transforming hemp waste fibers into electrodes for supercapacitors. Dr. Midland.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here. Yeah, believe it or not, there's a lot of hemp being grown in Canada. So our idea that we've been working on for a little bit now is developing supercapacitor devices with much wider operating conditions than current commercial technologies. So we were specifically living in Alberta.
Apologies for the delay here. We're having some download difficulties from the American Chemical Society.
Which is oil of land and gas. We're looking for devices that could operate at high temperatures and fairly extreme environments. And we came across waste fiber, specifically hemp bast fiber, which is being stockpiled in a large high bay at the Alberta Ingenuity Technology Futures building. They use the rest of the hemp for applications like building materials, clothes, automotive panels. But the hemp bast fiber literally sits in a high bay about the size of this room and doesn't have a good economic use. We realized that the material has fairly unique structure as a precursor, and we're able to transform it into carbon nanosheets, which, though of course structurally are quite different from graphene for a supercapacitor, perform identically, if not perhaps a little bit better. So just to go through my short presentation, essentially the first slide shows that our general aim is not only to increase the energy density of the supercapacitors while maintaining their excellent power as compared to battery applications, but also to operate much higher temperatures than commercial technologies. So right now, commercial systems typically don't go over 70 degrees Celsius for oil and gas applications or mining or any kind of exploration. You really need to be above 100, preferably 150 degrees C, perhaps even approaching 200. Slide. So here's the hemp bast fiber. It looks like yarn. There's a high bay full of it. They use a big forklift to move it around. There's no economic end use for it currently. And the material is, it's a nanocomposite. It really is a true nanoscale composite consisting of semicellulose, lignin, and crystalline cellulose. And the part that we're interested in, the part that can kind of be transformed into graphene-like materials, is the crystalline cellulose. So we developed a very inexpensive, very scalable method to take this hemp bast fiber, which you see right up there, here's kind of a little yarn of it, and first essentially pressure cook it. So kind of cook it in a 180 degree C pressurized water environment, essentially, to dissolve the semicellulose and the lignin, and then to use a very cheap activation method using potassium hydroxide to create these holy carbon nanosheets. And you see those at the bottom. So essentially, the hemp bast fiber, the elementary structure is 2 nanometers. We couldn't get quite down to the 2 nanometer thickness, but we got down to about 20 nanometers. And then we punched it full of holes. So at the end, it's a bunch of carbon sheets that really resemble Kleenex. So if you take a bunch of Kleenex, just throw it up in the air, crumple it, let it land. That's what it looks like. And it has surface areas that are completely on par with some of the best graphenes out there. Slide, please. So here's the material. There's a bit of data there, but the fun part to look at is the actual structure of the hemp bast fiber. So you see the two top images. Again, it looks like sheets of carbon. This particular one is about 20 nanometers thick. The other thing is, because we started out with crystalline cellulose, it winds up being a highly ordered material, which is highly electrically conductive, which is essential for supercapacitors. So it's not quite as conductive as graphite, but it's about 10 times more conductive than commercial state-of-the-art activated carbon. So you have high surface area, you have a very open graphene-like structure or morphology, and you have very high electrical conductivity that's 10 times higher than commercial activated carbon. Slide, please. And what we're able to do with this material, because it's so open, it's so electrically conductive, is that we're able to test it in an ionic liquid. So conventional devices are made with organic electrolytes, and organic electrolytes typically don't go above 65 or 70 degrees C. They literally ignite at higher temperatures. Ionic liquids are stable at above 300 degrees C, but the problem with ionic liquids is that they solidify at either minus 20 or minus 30 degrees Celsius, so they're very viscous at room temperature. The holy grail of trying to use ionic liquids is getting a carbon structure which is sufficiently open and sufficiently conducive that at room temperature, where you still have to operate your device, and even at 0 degrees C, you could still get the ionic liquid to properly penetrate and to get a good rate capability out of your device. So people do that with graphene. Our material is very graphene-like in its performance, but cost-wise, it's probably about 1,000 times cheaper. So as far as manufacturing it, we did the cost analysis anywhere between $500 to $1,000 a ton versus graphene, which I don't follow the prices that closely, but essentially you're talking $1,000 or more per kilo at best. So our material, if you look at the bottom slide, and this is the thing that made it quite unique. Not only did it work at the high temperatures, so it worked at 100 degrees C, it worked at 60, but it worked down all the way down to 0 degrees C, which is a feat that really hasn't been accomplished before for a conventional ionic liquid device. So we didn't really play around with any of the electrolyte chemistry. We just basically took something off the shelf and made it work with our material. Slide, please. I think that was the last one. So if you look at the performance, of course, supercapacitors will never perform. They will never have the same energy density as batteries. Anyone that says they will is very optimistic. So we have an energy density by device of 10 watt-hours per kilogram. It's roughly a factor of 10 to 15 lower than a lithium-ion battery. It's still state-of-the-art for a supercapacitor. However, as far as the power density, we're more than 100 times higher than a conventional lithium-ion battery. And of course, this can operate at 100 degrees C, no problem. So really, in applications which we're interested in, which is you don't have to store a lot of energy, but you need high charging rates. You don't need that high discharge rates, but you need high charging rates, and you need for it to survive at a very harsh environment and do this over and over and over, cycling for thousands and thousands and thousands of times, these have a real advantage. And if you look at the performance of our material, so the top right compared to a variety of other carbons out there, essentially, I wouldn't say we're the best. We're pretty close to some of the best. But the thing that differentiates us is that we're dirt cheap. So most of these carbons that we're comparing are things like graphene, carbon nanotubes, combinations of the two, which are certainly scientifically interesting, but can't be made for $500 a ton, whereas our material can. If you look at the bottom slide, it's what's called a classic Rigoni chart, which tells you the power density. Well, it tells you the energy density versus the power density. Our material, of course, they don't approach batteries, so they're not even as good as a lead acid battery, but then none of the supercaps are. But where we have a real advantage is we could operate at much higher temperatures, and we could operate at much higher powers, which is a very nice complement to batteries in some applications, and in certain applications is a great standalone use. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions, Kath?
Just how much hemp do you actually need to produce these electrodes? And I mean, could this be something that could be applied elsewhere other than Canada? Are there other resources of hemp around that?
In Canada, it's legal to grow it. So there's farmers in Manitoba, there's farmers in Alberta, British Columbia. In the US, they've, I believe, legalized the research in hemp, but they haven't started growing it commercially yet. But to make these things, you get about 20 to 25% return on a kilo of hemp as far as these super caps. So let's say you lose 3/4 of your material roughly. So if you want to make a device that has, let's say, 100 grams, you could do the numbers, you need half a kilo roughly. There's huge quantities of it, so it's...
Could there be other applications for these carbon nanosheets as well?
Absolutely. We're actually working with some of the provincial agencies to use these things for sorbents for tar sands, tailings operations. So because they're so open and they have such nice, well-developed porosity, they seem to work much better than activated carbons for adsorbing things like naphthenic acids and other organics from contaminated water. So a lot of environmental remediations where you would be normally using activated carbon, these would work much better and roughly the same price. I would say it's any cheaper, but it's certainly much more bang for your buck as far as the performance.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Doug Dollimore, Science Elements. I have a couple quick questions. One of them is, how much energy does it take to produce these versus what you would need to produce a graphene supercapacitor?
Well, we haven't worked with graphene. I mean, we have for other applications, but we haven't done the energy analysis for graphene. As far as the synthesis process, it's very much akin to making activated carbon. So if you go on any website, again, $500 to $1,000 a ton, depending on the quality, we had an economic analysis done, and the numbers tend to come in the same as far as the processing. And, you know, there's ways you can optimize it further. I don't want to say too much about graphene because we haven't done the economic or the energy analysis for, so you're going to have to ask expert in graphene.
Okay. And it says in the press release that you're gearing up for small-scale manufacturing. I'm wondering how far that is away.
I've made the transition to the United States, so where I think we have some potential partners already in terms of pilot facilities. One of the issues I've had is really getting that $5 million in capital to make the stuff in kilogram scale, and I think in the U.S. there's some really good infrastructure for that, which we look forward to utilizing. We can make the stuff on gram quantities right now, but we just don't have access to batch or continuous processing of these carbons, but expect that we will fairly soon.
Bela?
Bela Busley, ACS News Service. What would you attribute the advantages of this material over graphene, three-dimensional structure or like?
Well, the big advantage is cost. So we're, 1,000 times cheaper.
Well, that's great, but you know, hemp is not exactly a terribly, well, it's abundant now because they don't know what to do with it, with the remnants. But once it proves out to be really useful, what's going to happen? You've got anything else in mind that would produce similar kind of structures?
Well, yes, of course we do, and we have, but it's beyond the scope of this news conference. You have to stay tuned. So graphene per se actually is not that good for supercaps, because if you visualize true graphene, it's like a deck of cards. And you throw it up in the air, it lands, and after a while, all the cards tend to restack on top of each other. So classic problem with graphene is that when you cycle it long enough, it loses surface area, or it loses ion accessible surface area. So that's why people look for things like crumpled graphene, non-restacking graphene. So things, graphene that looks like cooked bacon, essentially. What's the advantage of our material over that? I don't know if there is any except the cost. So we perform just as well as crumpled graphene. I wouldn't say we're better, but we're certainly not worse. And as far as growing hemp, it's a very robust plant to grow anywhere. So it's something that you grow it in Alberta, you could grow in Manitoba, you could grow it in Alaska. Mm-hmm. It's there's no particular reason why more and more farmers could not enter the growing hemp market, let's say in place like New York, which is where I'll be, or in Vermont, and kind of supply and demand. If there's a big demand for this stuff, there's bound to be supply. It's good stuff to grow.
It grows without the need of fertilizers and insecticides. Is that right? Or
I don't know all the details about growing hemp, but it's very, literally, you could grow it in very cold places that are fairly dry, which gives it a real advantage.
Katie
Cottingham, ACS News Service. So I'm wondering, is this the same plant that's used for marijuana that is hemp? You know, is
no,
is
it's 100% THC free.
Okay, you'd so it's a to, special kind of.
You have to smoke the high babe before you feel something.
Okay.
Well, it seems like the cost advantage would be really attractive to private industry, and they would be very interested in this. Have you had a lot of discussions with technology companies or battery companies?
We've had discussions with partnering with, there's different models for partnering. You could either take someone's hemp, you know, make a carbon, sell it to compete with activated carbon, sell it to compete with sorbents, sell it to compete with supercapacitor materials. So really sell it anywhere by the kilo versus by the ton, right? Or you could actually make a device company that just uses the hemp for the electrodes and actually sells gadgets that go into downhole oil equipment or any kind of oil services or mining exploration applications. And we've had discussions with both, and it's to be determined how it pans out.
We have an online question. Does it matter which variety of hemp is grown? I'm assuming you're using food hemp waste. I think we addressed that a little bit, but.
The stuff we use primarily goes into, they're targeting building applications for it. So I'm not an expert in all the varieties of hemp, but the things that they use for, you know, the hemp that we used, or the waste from the hemp that we used, goes into things like automotive body panels and reinforcement for concrete and things like that.
Do you think theoretically in the U.S., since there are places where medicinal marijuana is legal or in Colorado,
recreational
marijuana, would that kind of waste fiber also be possible?
I imagine they would work quite similar. You need a certain structure for to be able to transform it from, you know, from the bark to the carbon nanosheets, and as long as you have something that approaches it relatively close, you could achieve it just by tweaking the parameters. So unless it's very structurally different, which I don't expect it would be, it's still doable. Of course, there'd be some optimization, just like there's always optimization going forward.
Do we have any other questions? All right, that's all we have time for. Thank you so much, Dr. Mitlin. The archived version of this session will be posted at www.ustream.tv/channel/ACS Live. Please join us for our next press conference today at 11:30 on sniffing out the billions of dollars that get smuggled into Mexico every year. Thank you.
All right, great press conference there from the American Chemical Society on using hemp fibers for superconductors. That could be an amazing, amazing change. Giving you a look now, we got a couple minutes to spare, a look at the Seattle Hemp Fest grounds from last year from atop the Stephen T. Colbert Bridge to Nowhere. Beautiful bridge that leads you right into the main stage area. That's where we're overlooking. There's the Seattle Hemp Fest main stage. And pan back left would be toward where Herb Thrasher's booth is there at near the main stage. See if I can move you over there. Herb's booth is right about up in, there's Oil Slick right there. And then you'll have Herb's booth somewhere along this back row, back in here somewhere. There's Herb Thrasher, I think, right about there. So you've got to make it to Seattle Hemp Fest. I have just posted my schedule for Seattle Hemp Fest. All of the different speakers that I plan on filming, as well as the bands that we definitely want to get a look at. Of course, Chimera is playing at the Seattle Hemp Fest this year. And December in Red. And of course, our good friend Chief Greenbud will be playing the main stage at Seattle Hemp Fest. If you want to get my schedule, they're all available on the Rad Russ short link platform. Go to rad-r.us/shf-russ and you'll get the you'll get everything you need to know. But at the main stage on Sunday, Chief Greenbud plays the 4 o'clock to 4:30 set. That's right. Chief Greenbud gets to play at 4:20 on the main stage at Seattle Hemp Fest. I'm so happy for him about that. Check out my post on RadicalRust.com, and you'll get not only my schedule, where I'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but also Google agenda calendars for the main stage, McWilliams stage, Seeley stage, Hemposium, and Bass Drop stages.